Are you tired of your favorite cut of beef or chicken costing more and weighing less every time you buy it from the store? Well, Good Ranchers Price Lock Guarantee offers a sizzling solution. During their April Price Shield campaign, Good Ranchers is not just offering a temporary fix, but a long-term solution. They're locking in your price until 2026 when you subscribe to one of their boxes. GoodRanchers.com is where I get the most tender meat that's full of flavor every time. With options like beef, chicken, pork, and wild-caught seafood, they have something for even the pickiest of eaters. There's no reason to order takeout when you can make something far better at home. Good Ranchers even offers recipes to take your cooking skills to the next level. With meat prices on the rise and store-bought meat quality on the decline, Good Ranchers Price Shield will not just save you hundreds, but give you the best 100% American meat that you'll ever eat. Right now, when you go to GoodRanchers.com and use promo code DAILYWIRE, you'll get their exclusive Price Shield plus an additional 10% off your order. This offer ends at the end of the month, so if you want to secure your best price until 2026, go to GoodRanchers.com and use code DAILYWIRE. That's GoodRanchers.com, promo code DAILYWIRE.
Country music legend Willie Nelson has a new song out. And while other pop stars promote abortion, like Olivia Rodrigo, or devil worship, like Lil Nas X, Willie is focusing on a different issue. The southern border.
I work on the border. I see what I see. I work on the border, and it's working on me. I lie awake at night, knowing what I know. There's a price on the head of every border patrol, where the smugglers do business. That's where I make a stand. I know this old desert like the back of my hand.
It goes on. It's great. This is a big deal. Not so much because of what the song will do, as what the song represents. Willie Nelson is a big lib. Willie Nelson has supported the most left-wing candidates in the country for decades. He's smoked more Haitian oregano than Snoop Dogg. But he's a special kind of liberal. He's a liberal who gets conservatives. He caters to pot-smoking country music listeners. He is what Woody Harrelson has called a redneck hippie.
This country seems so divided, beautiful, ugly, black, white, blue, red. I love everybody. Maybe because I'm a redneck hippie. You know, the red in me thinks you should be allowed to own guns. The blue in me thinks squirt guns. So I'm red and blue, which makes purple. I'm purple.
Red and blue makes purple. Huh? It's a funny line. This is on SNL, too. And he's saying, look, I'm not just a total lib, I'm also a redneck. I'm a little bit of both. And this redneck hippie thing represents an important constituency. There are a lot of redneck hippies in America. Everybody loves Willie Nelson. Most people like Woody Harrelson, too. They're libs, they're Hollywood stars. But unlike all the other Hollywood stars, they understand the rest of the country. They don't hold the rest of the country in contempt. I don't know what exactly motivated Willie Nelson to release a song in an election year, praising U.S. Border Patrol. Maybe it's a patriotic concern about the invasion across our southern border. Maybe it's a liberal concern that Joe Biden, the candidate that Willie Nelson endorsed in 2020, is going to lose if he doesn't address his biggest political liability. Either way, this song, even if nobody listens to it, this song is bad news for Joe Biden and very good news for Donald Trump and the rest of us. I'm Michael Knowles. This is The Michael Knowles Show. Welcome back to the show. According to Advil, pain is racist. We will get to the racism of pain in a moment. First, though, subscribe to the Michael Knowles YouTube channel. Smash that subscribe button. Ring and ding-dong that bell. Also, maybe light up your Smells and Bells candle if you have one at home. If you're sitting around the living room, you can light it up now. Make your home smell like a 12th century monastery. There we go. Depending on what time of day it is, well, that's not true. Even if it's morning or night, you can light up a Mayflower Dawn or Mayflower Dusk cigar. I want to thank everyone for the birthday wishes. Very kind. I certainly plan to celebrate my birthday with a beautiful Mayflower cigar. If you have them, you can spark yours up as well. If you don't have them, you might consider getting them. We are in stock. I made sure they had stock of Mayflower in time for my birthday. I said I was going to throw a complete fit if we didn't have cigars in stock for my birthday. MayflowerCigars.com. You have to be 21 years or older to order. Some exclusions apply. Speaking of good news for Donald Trump, the judge in the Fulton County case, well, I should be clearer than that, because there are multiple Fulton County cases. There is the case brought by Fulton County against Donald Trump. The RICO case accusing Trump of being a gangster, a mob boss, because while he was president of the United States, he made a phone call to the Secretary of State of Georgia to just inquire into the obvious fraud that was going on in the 2020 election. And because of that, because President Trump raised questions about how the election has been conducted, as virtually every prominent Democrat has in all the elections that have been even remotely close or that they've even outright lost for the last, I don't know, for my entire lifetime. Because of that, they're now prosecuting Donald Trump. But there's another Fulton County case because the DA who brought that case and the prosecutor who was prosecuting that case appear to have been shacking up, you know, getting, doing some frisky things that husband and wife are supposed to do, but they're definitely not husband and wife. And it looks as though the DA prosecuting Trump unjustly enriched herself by overpaying her married boyfriend to prosecute the case. And then he was buying her all sorts of nice fancy dinners and trips and all the like. So then she gets prosecuted, or she's at least brought up and questioned by a judge for this. And the judge has ruled that she can stay on the case so long as she fires her boyfriend. So her boyfriend can no longer actually be the prosecutor prosecuting Trump, but she gets to be the DA and the prosecution of Trump can continue. This is from Fulton County Superior Court Judge Scott McAfee. I guess it's as big a win for Fannie Willis and the Democrats going after Trump as I can imagine. I mean, there was no world in which they said, oh yeah, enjoy your next vacation to the Caribbean where you're getting kickbacks of taxpayer dollars that you're paying your boyfriend to go after the president in an unprecedented kind of prosecution that is upending our political order. Yeah, I hope you try the conch fritters. They're really nice in St. Martin or wherever you're going to go. So that was never going to happen. So this was the biggest win for her. The prosecution against Trump continues. Her boyfriend's got to step back a little bit. He's gonna now, you know, have to go enjoy his Caribbean dinners in private, and she gets to keep going after him. The judge did rebuke Fannie Willis, however, for her quote tremendous lapse in judgment. He also questioned her honesty about the timing of the relationship beginning between her and this prosecutor. Seems pretty clear to me that the two of them are lying. If you watched any of the testimony, it's pretty clear. And their insistence that their relationship only began after he was hired was contradicted by close friends. And it just stinks to high heaven. They provided no evidence that their relationship began when they say it did. McAfee called it, quote, concerning that there were no documents to corroborate Willis's claim that she paid her boyfriend back. This was the whole corruption question here hinged on. She hires this guy who's totally unqualified to prosecute Trump. She overpays him. She pays him a ton of money. And then all of a sudden, he starts taking her on fancy trips. Now, she says, oh, I paid him back. So the judge says, all right, well, show me the proof that you paid him back. There must be a check. There must be a credit card receipt. There must be this. She must be that. And the best she could come up with was she paid for a round-trip airplane ticket from Atlanta. Like Atlanta to, I don't know. It was a very short, it was like an hour flight or something. Meanwhile, he's paying for all these dinners, all these expensive vacations. And she says, no, I paid him back, but it was in cash. So then the judge says, well, where'd you get all that cash? He goes, oh, I'm always storing cash all around my house. I've been keeping cash in my house since I took it out of the campaign fund for my first campaign. which is a crime. So she inadvertently admitted to embezzling campaign funds. They didn't even go after her for that. She looks as crooked as can possibly be. And the judge admits here, he's like, the fact that you don't have any receipts, you don't have any evidence for paying him back is troubling. But never mind, I'll let you keep prosecuting this. No big deal. Because it, quote, withstood direct contradiction and was corroborated by some other evidence, namely this one really cheap flight that she bought in 2022. Other than that, it looks ridiculous. But the judge says the claim, quote, was not so incredible as to be inherently unbelievable. And so, because he didn't have them on videotape the whole time, you know, doing all the things they said they didn't do, she gets to keep prosecuting. Now, I mentioned at the top of this that this is maybe good news for Trump. How is this good news for Trump? The prosecution continues. This woman gets a tiny little slap on the wrist. Not even that. The unqualified prosecutor's out, but they'll just get another one. The reason I think this could be good news for Trump is the reason that Jeffrey Toobin came up with on CNN. You remember Jeffrey Toobin? He's a liberal CNN analyst who had to step away for a while because of some personal scandals, but now he's back. He's no fan of Trump, certainly. He's no conservative Republican. But he comes back and he says this ruling from the judge is actually probably pretty good news for Trump because it just irreparably damages the reputation of the prosecution.
Today was a very good day for Donald Trump. This case is going nowhere. Even if, in the extremely unlikely event that this somehow staggers to trial in August or in the fall, think about this. There's another racketeering case in Georgia where jury selection, not the trial, jury selection has taken a year. This case is never going to trial before the election. You know, it's an embarrassment, all of this. I mean, Fani Willis has hung on, but this case is going nowhere very quickly. And as far as I can tell, this trial will be conducted during the presidency of Malia Obama. I mean, it is so far behind.
So, because Gwen was saying she thinks that it was an anomaly, the RICO case involving Young Thug that lasted for 10 months.
Right. I mean, okay, you know, jury selection will take somewhere between a month and a year. I mean, there are lots of legal motions that are still to be decided in this case, just as there are in the other cases that Trump is facing.
So Fani Willis has managed to cling on. This has already weakened a very weak type of prosecution. And in this other example of this type of prosecution, the RICO case, it took 10 months. It took a year. Well, the Democrats don't have that kind of time. They've got, what, 8 months till the election? So on the current timetable, there's no way that this case goes anywhere in any meaningful period of time. And Toobin thinks it's not going to go anywhere ever. He says it'll be the presidency of Malia Obama before we end up seeing anything. Totally right. Totally right. And even if we hadn't seen the scandal with the prosecutor and the DA, this bizarre, tawdry sex scandal that put them both on the stand, that exposed them for the gangsters that they are. Ironically, they're going after Trump with a legal provision meant to target the mob, and they are behaving like the mob, keeping cash all over their house. I'm waiting for them to pull a gun out of their ankle. But even if the case had not been so weakened in that way, it already was probably going nowhere. This might have just been the death knell. Great news. Trump is capitalizing on it. Right now, go to preborn.com/Knowles. Last year, because of you, Preborn's network of clinics saved over 58,000 babies. Thank you to all who made this possible. We need to celebrate these precious babies. When Charlotte found out she was pregnant, she was 7 weeks along. In the back of her mind, she thought abortion was the best solution. She went into a Preborn clinic, and after hearing her baby's heartbeat and seeing her beautiful baby on ultrasound, she chose life. Her heart is filled with gratitude for all of you who made this possible. Just $28 a month can be the difference between the life and death of a child. When a mother meets her baby on ultrasound and hears that heartbeat, it is a divine connection that doubles a baby's chance at life. Let's join together, help mothers choose life. To donate, dial #250, say keyword baby. That's keyword baby, or go to preborn.com/Knowles, K-N-O-W-L-E-S. Preborn fundraises separately for all the administrative costs. So every dollar you give goes straight towards saving babies. Go to preborn.com/Knowles, K-N-O-W-L-E-S, and donate right now. President Trump, hot on the heels of this judgment, which at least on the surface looks kind of bad for him, doesn't miss a beat, just goes full bore after Fannie Willis.
All these local cases like Fannie. It's spelled Fannie. It's spelled Fannie like your ass, right, Fannie? But when she became DA, she decided to add a little French, a little fancy, Fannie and, you know, Fannie and Mr. and Mrs. Wade, which his wife did not appreciate. His wife didn't appreciate. Can you imagine these two people trying to take down a very popular, I'm a very popular president. I mean, again, I got more votes than any sitting president in history. We have these two lowlifes trying to take down a president of the United States. But, you know, equally badly, they went after 26 people. They wanted to make it 48 people. They had some senators that these guys know very well who were indicted, who were ready to be indicted, and somebody stopped it. And they wanted to find out what the hell is going on in Georgia. What's going on with the elections that it's so crazy? And they almost got indicted for that.
The man, I've said it before, he's anti-fragile. This is a term, I've applied this term to Trump since probably 2016. It's a term that's the subject of a book by Nassim Nicholas Taleb. And it describes things that are pretty sturdy. You know, let's say there's sturdy things. A sturdy thing falls off a table and it gets a little bit weakened, but it's still strong enough. Okay, it's fine. We'd call that sturdy. We'd call it pretty well built, pretty strong. Then there are things that are fragile. And fragile things, they fall off a table, they shatter. They're just, you know, they just can't withstand a lot of pressure. We think of those as the two categories. There's a third category, though, which Taleb talks about, which are things that are anti-fragile. Things that seem to get tougher the more you damage them, the more you pummel them, the more you attempt to injure them, the stronger the things get. That appears to be the case with Trump. I'm not just saying this to make lemonade out of lemons or anything like that. I'm not just saying it because I like the guy. The man is being indicted at four different ways. He potentially faces something like 700 years in prison. He obviously, it doesn't really matter. In any case, he's facing the rest of his life in prison. Corrupt prosecutors are trying to take all of his stuff. They're coming up with ridiculous evaluations for the worth of some of his properties. I'm going to one of his properties tomorrow, Mar-a-Lago, for an event for a group called Catholics for Catholics. Mar-a-Lago, they're saying, is worth $17 million. Probably like one little tiny piece of that property is worth $17 million without any of the business on top of it, without any of the memberships, without even factoring in that it goes from ocean to ocean. It goes from water to water on Palm Beach, which is one of the most valuable pieces of property in the United States. It's just absurd. But they're just you're doing it to try to take all of his money away. And still, this guy seems to get more excited every time they go after him. Most politicians, in his case, when they first start going after him, maybe he'd put on some bluster. And then as they continue to go after him, they threaten him with jail time. They threaten to take all his money. They threaten to banish him to St. Helena. Most politicians would get defensive. They'd say, hey, whoa, come on. Hey, this isn't fair. You know, let's be reasonable here. Okay, I admit maybe I, but with this guy, every time they announce a new prosecution, he goes out and gives an even more boisterous press conference. He seems to get excited by it. He seems to thrive on this. And this isn't anything new in Trump's character. This is what we've seen for 20 years now, or more than 20 years. I mean, the guy's been a tabloid star since the 80s, and he was a network TV star in the early to mid 2000s. And then he would get into these matches. I don't want to use the vulgar term for it, but he would get into these feuds with Hollywood stars and he'd seem to relish it. You know, Rosie O'Donnell criticizes him on TV and then Trump launches a years-long jihad against Rosie O'Donnell that he kept up during the 2016 presidential race. He just thrives on this kind of thing. And so now, you know, there's another judgment that seems to hurt him, even though politically it will probably help him. And he says, oh, let's go. I'm going to make fun of Fannie Willis's name. I'm going to compare it to a vulgar word. I'm going to, and this is the key. The man's real political talent is he can engage people who are otherwise not particularly interested in politics in relatively complex political matters. And that skill should not be undervalued. He is a showman. He is the best showman in America. He's the funniest comedian in America. He's the biggest, best TV star in America. He was the star of the top-rated show on network television for 15 years, okay? There are objective measures to say this guy is very good at what he does. He's very good at capturing attention, keeping people tuned in. What we're talking about here in Fulton County is a complex, dry, and boring case involving a RICO statute, a racketeering law. It's my job to read about this thing, and even I kind of get lost in the weeds on what exactly they're trying to argue here. But Trump can convey this to ordinary voters who are going about their lives, have their jobs, have their families, do not for a living, you know, read all of these kinds of court briefings and news reports, and he can connect it for them. He can weave this into a narrative that is compelling for the ordinary person. Most politicians, virtually no politicians can do that. That's a very impressive political skill. This is why Trump's coalition requires getting voters who are unlikely to be that engaged to come out and vote. That's one of the ways he was able to win in 2016. That's why the Democrats had to change all the voting rules in 2020 and use COVID as an excuse to do it. That's how the man is still capturing the attention of voters, even as the elite political class was praying that virtually 97% of the elite political class was praying that some non-Trump candidate would be the nominee in 2020. But it was never going to happen. And the reason they didn't see it is because there is a major chasm between the Trump base and Americans who do not regularly travel to the Beltway and the elite political class. Trump gets it. And if anyone wants to challenge the guy and take the mantle from him for the Republican Party, they're going to need to try to get on his level, which is probably not possible. There's so much more to say. First, though, go to preborn.com/Knowles. I am here today because exactly 34 years ago, almost to the minute, my mother chose life. I guess she would have chosen life in the months prior too. But anyway, that's when I was born. You are here today because your mother chose life. The miracle of life is a gift that everyone deserves because every life is precious. That is why this show has partnered with Preborn's network of clinics.
So when I came to my first visit and I had my sonogram and seeing the heartbeat, it really hit home that, oh my gosh, there's a miracle literally growing inside of my womb.
These ultrasounds are more than just a medical procedure. They're a gateway to a mother's heart. The moment she hears her baby's heartbeat, the odds of her choosing life double. One ultrasound costs only $28, but any amount will help. All gifts are tax deductible, and 100% of your donation will save babies. To donate securely, dial #250, say the keyword baby. That is #250, say the keyword baby, or go to preborn.com/Knowles, K-N-O-W-L-E-S. That is preborn.com/Knowles, K-N-O-W-L-E-S. I really support this organization. Please donate as generously as you can. Preborn.com/Knowles. Enough of Fannie Willis. We are going to stick to the topic of liberal black women. Kamala Harris is a real problem for the Democrat Party. Don't take my word for it. You can read about it in the Washington Post. The Washington Post, perhaps the house organ of the liberal establishment, just ran an editorial. This was written by Kathleen Parker, called on VP Kamala Harris to step aside for the country's sake. The Kamala conundrum comes down to this, she writes. She was picked because she was black and female, a combo tantamount to job security. Now that she's become a burden to the Democratic ticket, Biden can't fire her. He can't risk alienating his base, full stop. Totally true. I totally agree with this Washington Post writer. I don't say that very often, but I say it there. Quote, the seriousness of this situation can't be overstated. Biden's diminishing faculties, notwithstanding his relatively successful State of the Union address, and his increasing physical frailty are concerning. Every honest person knows he's not in top form. A recent New York Times poll found that 73% of registered voters believe Biden is too old to be the nation's top executive. This includes 61% of those who voted for him in 2020. That is so totally true, and I'm enjoying Schadenfreude. I just love it. I loved every word that I read of this Washington Post piece, because she's right. And this is a tragedy for the Democrats, a tragedy in the truest sense of the term. The downfall, the potential downfall here, is not coming from some external factor. It's not coming from some, you know, uncontrollable environmental event. The potential downfall for the Democrats here, for Joe Biden and for that whole party, is coming from one of their own character flaws, one of their own mistakes that they couldn't overcome, and so it just causes their downfall. This is the consequence, not just of Joe Biden's cynical decision to pick a black woman and to exclude any other candidate from the race. But he said, I need to pick a Democrat, prominent black woman. There were three people who could have filled that role, who were actually even somewhat plausibly able to serve as the running mate. That was Susan Rice. She was out, though, because she's not all that charismatic. She's fairly competent, it seems, but she was not that charismatic on the campaign trail. And she was Obama's fall man for Benghazi. So Obama destroyed her political career. She's out. The other one was Karen Bass. She is an actual communist. She was a member of communist organizations and a Looney Tune Congress lady from California at the time. That was not going to fly. So the only other option was Kamala Harris. She was just the last woman standing, and Biden picked her, even though he probably doesn't like her very much because her campaign was focused on how he's a terrible racist. So he picks her cynically because she's a black woman and he's a white man. But it's so much worse than that for the Democrats. This is so far beyond Joe Biden. This is a consequence of the Democrats' anti-white, anti-male bigotry. That's it. The Democrat Party has decided to adopt a form of identity politics that maligns white men in particular, also Christians, also people who are in any way traditional, people who, you know, have ordinary, traditional, sexual, and romantic family behaviors, and those guys are out, but especially white people and men. Now they got to deal with that because they have a pretty good candidate in the wings. That would be Gavin Newsom, but he's a white man. Seems to be straight. He seems to be all the things that Democrats hate, so they can't pick him. And then they're all floating this idea of Michelle Obama. Michelle Obama doesn't want to be president. She was the only person, I guess, who could take over for Kamala Harris. Not going to happen. Who's left? You going to pick Susan Rice? You going to pick Karen Bass? I don't think so. You're done. Sorry, guys. You made your bed. Now lie in it. I'm not saying Biden can't win. He can win. The liberals control the media. They could rig the election again. It would be a little harder because they don't have the excuse of a global pandemic. I'm not saying Biden can't win. Things could turn around for Biden. But as of now, the Democrats seem quite worried he's going to lose. And if he does, it will be because of their own flaws. Now, speaking of racial ideology, Advil has just decided that pain is racist.
I should not have to beg my doctor to run tests or ask them to take another look.
Advil hosted a roundtable.
Welcome to discussion Believe about My systemic Pain, racism. A discussion about systemic pain bias in healthcare. I want to thank all of you and all of you for joining me today as we talk about this very important issue. I also want to thank the Pain Equity Project developed by Advil in partnership with the Morehouse School of Medicine and Black Health for inviting us to be a part of their commitment to addressing pain bias in Black communities.
Pain bias. We need pain equity. If that doesn't sum up this whole ideology, I don't know what does. We need pain. We need everyone to feel pain. We need pain equity. You whites aren't feeling enough pain, and you're going to feel more pain. We're going to make sure of it. We're Advil. We used to be a pain reliever. Now we're a pain multiplier for white people. We need pain equity. I guess they could mean that no one's going to have any pain anymore. I don't know how they're going to achieve that. There's not enough Advil in the world because this is a fallen world. So where does this crazy ideology come from? Comes from liberal utopia, liberal utopianism. The utopia, frankly, the liberal part, both that view, which is so prominent today, fundamentally denies original sin. I believe in original sin. Christians believe in original sin. Even non-Christians broadly agree in Jews certainly believe in something akin to original sin. You know, it's right there in the very first book of the Bible. Muslims do. Even sensible pagans do. The reason to believe in original sin is not because of some mystical intuition or strictly because of revelation. It's because we all have eyes and experience the world, and we recognize that the world is broken. There's just something fundamentally broken. And we all sin, and bad things happen to good people, and there's just something broken about this world. Suffering is a part of this world. What the liberals say is, no, we're not fundamentally broken. Christians, recognizing the problem of original sin, see that we can't actually ever save ourselves. We require God's grace, and we cooperate with God's grace. It's not like we don't have any role in it. It's not as though we don't have any free will, but we require God's grace. We're not going to save ourselves. The liberals, the liberal utopians, they say, no, we can save ourselves. First of all, we got to get rid of all that old fuddy-duddy religion that's inhibiting progress. And then what we need to do is just be really, really rational, and we're just going to construct a proper society that eliminates all the causes of the pain, which are systemic injustice. If we were just a little more rational, if we were just a little bit more technocratic, then we would eliminate all that systemic, structural injustice, and then we wouldn't have any pain, and then we'd all be happy. And you hear this with the techno-utopians. They'll say, then we're going to cure death. Then we're going to upload our brains to the cloud. Then we're going to live forever, man, and it's all going to be really groovy, right? It's not going to happen, and their attempts to do so are probably only going to cause more pain. But that's the fundamental distinction. The Christians and the normal people understand that there is such a thing as original sin because it's a fallen world, and the liberal utopians say, not necessarily. You know, for all of human history, everywhere in the world, we've been trying to fix this problem, but we're very close to the solution. Just give us a little more time and money. Okay, that's one problem. A derivative of that problem is the ideology of egalitarianism, the notion that we're all just the same. We're all just exactly the same. There's really no distinction between any of us. Now, of course, there are distinctions between people. There's distinctions between men and women. There's distinctions between the races. There's distinctions between cultures. There's distinctions between geographies. There's distinctions between classes. There's distinctions between all sorts of distinctions between ages. The liberals want to deny all of that. But the consequence of that is, if you start with the premise that we're all pretty much exactly the same, then when disparities of outcome present themselves inevitably, the only cause of that, if there's no original sin, if it's not a fallen world, if there are no distinctions and natural inequalities between people, then the only cause of that can be some systemic structural injustice, systemic racism, systemic sexism, systemic whateverism. That can be the only answer. Black men run faster than white men, generally. That's just a general rule that has always been true and will always be true. White men swim faster than black men. That's another one. That's just true. It's just always been true. It always will be true. Men run faster than women. You see that issue coming to a head in the transgender debate. Why is it though? Why is it that black guys run faster than white guys and white guys swim faster than black guys? There was a study. I Googled it. I said, what's the explanation for this? There's a study from 2010. I'm sure there have been many other studies. This is from the International Journal of Design and Nature and Ecodynamics. Here's what they say, just in the abstract. Here we explain a much avoided phenomenon in the evolution of speed sports for men and women. The world records in running tend to be set by black athletes and in swimming by white athletes. We show that this phenomenon is predictable from physics. Locomotion is a falling forward cycle in which body mass falls forward and then rises again. Mass that falls from a higher altitude falls faster, down and forward. In running, the altitude, L1, is set by the position of the center of mass above the ground. In swimming, the altitude is set by the upper body rising above the water, and it is proportional to HL1, where H is the height of the athlete. Stick with me. They're using, you know, variables and certain jargon. The anthropometric literature shows that the center of mass in blacks is 3% higher above the ground than in whites. This means that blacks hold a 1.5% speed advantage in running, and whites hold a 1.5% speed advantage in swimming. Among athletes of the same height, Asians are even more favored than whites in swimming, but they are not setting records because they are not as tall. Boom, that's it. Simple enough. You don't really need a scientific study to tell you that. You already kind of know that from common sense if you have eyes and any experience of the world. But that's that. So what? What are you going to do about that? Are Asians going to get taller? Are black people and white people going to suddenly change their center of mass? No, it's not going to happen. That's just a natural inequality. So if we can accept those kinds of natural inequalities, and, you know, we do our best to be as just to everyone as we possibly can, but we just recognize if people are kind of different, men and women are different, people from different cultures and geographies are different. Yeah, okay, we do that, we'll probably have a great time and all flourish. But if we deny that, you're going to just keep banging your head against a wall, because the further your ideology strays from reality, the more frustrated and angry and revolutionary and resentful you're going to get. And all of a sudden, you're going to say that pain is racist. Pain, a fact of a fallen world experienced by everyone. You're going to say, no, I deserve to live without any pain ever. And I'm sure all of the disfavored groups, all my perceived enemies, they don't have any pain. I'm the only one with pain, and my pain is the only pain that matters. And that kind of resentful ideology is fueling our political system today, and it will not end very well. And we're going to need more than a couple of Advil to fix that problem.
This show is brought to you by Helix Sleep. Sleep, especially as you get older, is so critical, but no two people sleep alike. That's why Helix offers several different mattress models, each designed for specific sleep positions and preferences. Go to helixsleep.com/dailywire and take their sleep quiz to find the mattress made for you. Whether you're a side sleeper, a stomach sleeper, a hot sleeper, or a cold sleeper, Helix has just the mattress for you. I took the Helix sleep quiz and was matched with a Helix midnight mattress because I wanted a medium firmness and I sleep on my side. I am sleeping so much better on my new mattress. Don't want to take my word for it? Well, Helix has been awarded the number one mattress picked by GQ and Wired magazine. It's even recommended by multiple leading chiropractors and doctors of sleep medicine as a go-to solution for improving your sleep. Take the quiz and order the perfect mattress right to your door, shipped for free. It's so quick and fun to unbox, and you won't believe how well you'll sleep. All Helix mattresses come with a 100-night trial and a 10 or 15-year warranty. Helix even offers financing options and flexible payment plans. A great night's sleep is never far away. Helix is offering 20% off all mattress orders and a free bedroom bundle for our listeners. Go to helixsleep.com/dailywire and use code HELIXPARTNER20. This is their best offer yet, and it won't last long. That's helixsleep.com/dailywire, code HELIXPARTNER20.
Today, as many of you have very delightfully tweeted at me and messaged me, is my birthday. Very kind. Thank you for the happy birthday notes. I think the tradition is that I'm given one wish, and my wish is that I wish for you all to have the opportunity to try Mayflower cigars. Now, it took a lot of banging my fist on the table, took a lot of just screaming, throwing, you know, plates at the wall and all sorts of things. I mean, I really put my effort into it here at the Daily Wire, but we were able to get the second batch, the long-awaited second batch of Mayflower cigars, delivered on time. And furthermore, I am giving you 10% off your entire order when you use code BIRTHDAY at checkout. These cigars, by the way, Mayflower cigars are as good as they get. These are premium handmade cigars from the finest tobacco farms in Esteli, Nicaragua, which right now is producing the best cigars in the world without question. I've enjoyed Cubans in my life. I've enjoyed cigars from other places too, especially Cuba. Right now, it's not even close. The best stuff is coming out of Esteli, and the best stuff is coming out of the factory that is making these cigars, and it is these cigars, okay? Whether you prefer a mild to medium cigar, or maybe you like a medium to fuller bodied cigar, we've got two options here that will cater to your tastes, the Mayflower Dawn and the Mayflower Dusk. This deal is one day only. It's also probably just inevitably one day only because we don't have very much stock left. I did allow for some pre-sale to go on when we knew the batch would land. Most of the cigars sold out even in that short pre-sale. So the 10% is because I really appreciate all of you. You made this cigar I think the biggest cigar launch ever in the history of cigars way back in October or November, whenever that was. Really appreciate it. 10% off today, mayflowercigars.com. Use code BIRTHDAY at checkout for 10% off. Get your Mayflowers today. You must be 21 years old or older. Some exclusions apply. My favorite comment yesterday, or on Friday, I suppose, is from Drummer's Workshop, Norm's Music. I'm telling you, I don't look at the names in the comment. I just look at the comment, but the Drummer's Workshop, Norm's Music keeps popping up as one of my favorites, who writes, "For Kamala Harris to care about the southern border, there has to be a Planned Parenthood built over there." That explains it. That explains how we're going to be able to get the vice president to visit the southern border. We're going to have to stop pointing out that illegal aliens are killing American citizens. And we can just suggest to her that actually a lot of American citizens are killing American citizens, their own children down there. So you're more than welcome to go. And then she would run. She would run down there like the Roadrunner. Speaking of illegal aliens, Tyson Foods is reportedly hiring lots of illegal aliens in New York City. Tyson already employs about 42,000 immigrants and refugees. Now, it's unclear, naturally, how many of those people are illegal aliens. Tyson doesn't want to release those numbers. In its very nature, it's an opaque question. But we're talking 42,000 immigrants and refugees, including, one would imagine, a lot of illegal aliens. Garrett Dolan, who's an HR leader at Tyson, just told Bloomberg, "We would like to employ another 42,000 if we could find them." You want another? Let's just say for a moment that immigrants and refugees is a euphemism for illegal aliens. I'm not saying it is, but if I were a gambling man, I'd put my money on it. You've already got 42,000 of these people, most of whom shouldn't be in the country, working for you. And you say, "Yeah, I wish we could violate the law even more." Oh boy, you bet. Or, "I wish we could help others to violate the law even more, even if we're not legally liable." Absolutely. Why? Why is that? The HR manager tells us. He says, they're very, very loyal. They've been uprooted, and what they want is stability. What they want is a sense of belonging. I think he just said the quiet part out loud. This is why big business loves illegal immigration. Big business loves illegal immigration because illegal aliens are easy to exploit. They don't have very much. They're very grateful for any job that you will give them. They're willing to accept low wages. They're willing to accept bad working conditions. They're willing to accept really long hours. They're willing to accept not having any legal protections because they're not in this country legally. They're willing to accept all sorts of things. One, out of a sincere gratitude that they have something here, economic opportunity, that they didn't have back in Honduras or wherever they came from. But that's just the carrot. There's also the stick part. The reason that illegal aliens are very easy to exploit by big business is that if they ever step out of line, it's going to be one phone call to ICE and those guys are going to be on a plane tomorrow. It's not that immigration enforcement in the United States can't deport people. It certainly can deport people. It just doesn't because powerful entrenched interests in the government and in big business don't want them to. The Democrats in the government don't want them to because they view the illegal aliens as a future voting base that will give them a permanent electoral majority. But big business, many of whom would call themselves Republicans, they're sort of just Chamber of Commerce Republicans, they like illegal immigration because they get a cheap, easily exploitable labor market. And so the crisis goes on. No matter which president we elect, we get more and more mass migration. And it causes major social problems. It kills people like Lake and Riley in Georgia and many others. It encourages exploitation, especially sexual exploitation. There was a survey came out from Fusion and Amnesty International years ago at this point. So long before we had a mass migration crisis at this level. And it suggested that something like 60 to 80% of women and girls who cross the southern border illegally are raped or otherwise sexually assaulted on the journey. Because the cartels, some of the worst people on the face of the earth, control the entirety of the border. So you've got this horrific cruelty going on, but it's being encouraged by the biggest, most powerful interests in the country. And they smile about it. The HR leader at Tyson, he says, oh, it's great. These guys are so loyal. Yeah, it's fabulous, you know? We get them all in a cabin on our plantation. Our factory. And, you know, we give them a little bit of food and stuff, a little bit of clothing, and they never leave. It's amazing because they don't have anything, and we threaten them. So it's really great. You know, they're really loyal. I wish we could hire a bunch more of them. Can we import some more slaves? Yeah, why didn't anyone think of this before? This is amazing. You know, you don't have to pay these guys very much, and they're afraid of you. And they don't have any rights or anything. Wow, what a great idea! We need to enshrine this into law. Oh wait, we can't, because if it were legal, then we couldn't exploit them. Okay, yeah. Anyway, though, keep them coming, baby. Biden, come on, send us some more. Uh huh. Not noble, not legal, not conducive to the flourishing of the United States.
Introducing two new and improved Jeremy's Razors. Fighting the left and building the future means constantly bringing your best, and that's exactly what Jeremy's Razors is doing. Choose between the new and improved Precision 5 Razor for an exceptionally smooth and close shave, or the brand new Sprint 3 Razor for a quick, clean shave. The new razors feature top-to-bottom redesign. Enjoy an ergonomic handle designed for superior durability. The new coated stainless steel blades are sharper, so they last longer. Increased flexibility allows the razor to better contour to your face to reduce nicks and cuts. Plus, the lubricating strip is now equipped with argan oil and aloe. It's time to toss out that woke razor and get yourself a Precision 5 or Sprint 3 trial kit today. Pledge to fight the left and build a future with Jeremy's Razors. Go to jeremysrazors.com and order yours today.
Speaking of liberal policy priorities, really disturbing story out of Politico. That's true most days, but this one's especially disturbing. A apparently well-known Democrat political consultant is going to die on Thursday. How do I know that? Do I see the future? Am I Nostradamus? No, it's not quite that. He's going to die because he scheduled his suicide. And why did he schedule his suicide? Well, according to Politico, on Thursday, March 21st, one of the Democratic Party's most accomplished campaign consultants will die. Hal Malchow has been planning for this day ever since 1987, when a genetic marker revealed he was likely to develop Alzheimer's. He was barely 35, political operative who'd come off managing Al Gore's first Senate campaign while overcome with worry about his mother's early descent into dementia. Malchow resolved at that time that he would commit suicide before, they say, take his own life. They like to use these euphemisms. He'd take his own life before he became too diminished and became a burden to those around him. So around his 72nd birthday last year, Malchow began communicating with an assisted end-of-life organization. It's just end-of-life euthanasia. Euthanasia, which literally means good death, and it ironically means exactly the opposite. It's the worst kind of death that is possible. It's the most unnatural and evil kind of death that is possible, where you not only die, you suffer in pain because it's a fallen world and we're mortal and we're all going to die. No one here gets out alive in the terrestrial sense, at least. But you also commit a sin. You become your own murderer. So the last act that you ever perform is not just to suffer with dignity and die, as we all will die someday, but you actually murder someone, namely yourself. And it divides the person into two people. It divides you against yourself and is just extremely unnatural and evil. To say nothing of the political cruelty of it. You know, we call suicide a selfish act because it harms the people around us. If you've ever dealt with a suicide, a friend, a family member, you know that the loved ones of that person never recover, really. You know, time heals all wounds to some degree, but they never totally get over it. It is a scandal and a trauma that endures. And if a loved one, if a parent, for instance, commits suicide, you are much more likely to commit suicide yourself. This is a political problem that spreads throughout the community. This is why Obviously, there's a Christian prohibition on slavery. There is a natural law argument against slavery. And there were pagan arguments against slavery. Plato talks about this in particular. When I was at UW-Madison, I was speaking with a very intelligent political scientist out there who pointed out the ancient Greek idea of miasma as a kind of pollution that just spreads throughout the polity, the community. And the miasma will come as a result of violent acts, and specifically suicide. Why is that? Well, is it just because those old ancient Greeks were superstitious? Not sure it's quite that. And he used a great example. He said, you go to a realtor, you say, I want to buy a home. You look at a few homes, you say, oh, I really like that home. The realtor says, okay, well, I should just disclose to you the previous owner, he killed himself. He shot his whole family and then he killed himself in the home. But don't worry, they wiped all the blood off the walls. It's all fine. They did a deep clean. It's all okay. Do you still want to buy it? Probably you're going to say no thanks. Why? It's not purely rational in the sense that you're not, you know, it's all clean. It's fine. There's no, what are you worried about? You're worried about ghosts haunting? You know, you're worried. You say, I don't know. It's just kind of like bad juju. You know, I just don't know, man. I don't want that. Well, bad juju is miasma, and it's an ancient concept, and it requires rituals to sort of undo it. What it expresses too is a recognition that when you kill yourself, you harm the political community because you're part of the political community and we depend one upon another because we're a social creature and the political animal to flourish. We don't flourish, you know, alone in the woods somewhere or floating in outer space. We flourish all together. This is why when the economy does poorly, you lose money. This is why when the cops stop arresting people, you are more in danger. It's why these social problems affect you, and this hyper-individualism pushed by the left and some quarters of the right is going to lead to a lot of social and political decay, and it's going to make your life a lot worse. But natural for the Democrat Party, which is a very selfish party and is the party of death. It's a party that celebrates death. It has made a sort of sacrament out of killing babies. It extols the virtues of not having any children, and now it suggests that people ought to kill themselves, not just when they're very old, but even when they're younger and younger. Very bad idea. We should pray that this guy doesn't actually go through with it. We should pray for his soul. We should try to convince him not to go through with it. And as a political matter, we should convince all of us, all parties, all around the country, every group, including the redneck hippies, and just the hippies and the rednecks and everyone in between, we should convince them to stop being so freaking selfish and to stop focusing on purely self-interest without any care for the common good. That is, from antiquity through the present, a marker of when societies go bad, when all you do is ever think about the self and not the common good, the actual political community, things are going to go really bad. And ironically, it's going to hurt your own self-interest. It always does. Speaking of music videos, today's Music Monday. The rest of the show continues now. You do not want to miss it. Become a member. Use code Knowles at checkout for 2 months free on all annual plans.